Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
9:20 now, I believe we're talking to a professor of political science and director of the U.S. Vietnam Research Center at the University of Oregon, Tung Vu. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How about you?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking the time with us on this 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. For some context, how did the United States come to get involved in Vietnam?
Oh, the U.S. wanted to support the anti-communist regime government in South Vietnam, led by Prime Minister at the time, Ngo Dinh Diem. And Mr. Ngo Dinh Diem was a true nationalist, representing the wish of many Vietnamese at the time to stay away from communism. And so he was heading a government that aimed for that goal, to establish an independent government in South Vietnam from the communists. And the U.S. came to support him.
But the French were involved first, right? Or it was a French colony?
Right.
How did
US,
that... Tell me about the history of Vietnam, if you would.
So Vietnam was colonized by the French for about 80 years. Then came the end of Second World War. And the Vietnamese already declared independent from France. But then the communists who left the government came to... join the communist group, the communist camp led by the Soviet Union and China. So nationalist Vietnamese broke away and formed their own government. That was happening during the war with the French for independence. So anti-colonial war became kind of a local anti-communist versus communist civil war.
When it comes to... The maneuverings of the United States to try to get out of the war, and I'm going to ask you a couple. I had a whole bunch of questions, Professor. I'm going to try to kind of get to the ones I wanted to since our time is limited. When it comes to, I remember as a kid, the president saying that he wanted peace with honor, but then President Nixon, but then if you look at what happened 50 years ago today, it was anything but honorable the way the United States left Saigon and Vietnam. And has history not shown that Nixon kind of kept the war going to help his reelection efforts?
That could have been the case, very well the case. But then there's still debate about whether Mr. Nixon really wanted to abandon the U.S. allies in South Vietnam. So Nixon made, you know, some really honest efforts to help South Vietnamese government, but then, you know, he got involved in the Watergate scandal and had to resign. So we don't know whether he, you know, he would have come to defend South Vietnam in its last hours if he had been in power.
When it comes to the negotiations, I remember a lot of, and I was just a kid for this, but I remember a lot of discussion about whether it would be a round table or a square table. Meanwhile, people were dying. Is there any way the United States could have won this war? Because, you know, the Vietnam veterans were treated terribly in this nation. Everyone I've spoken to have said that they weren't really given what they needed to win the war, that it was a crazy kind of thing where you'd lose lives to gain a bit of ground and then give it up the next day and then go back, do the same thing over and over. Talk about the U.S.'s promulgation of this war, if you will, and the way they went about it and why it didn't work so well.
Yeah, actually, I was a kid, too, at the time. Mm-hmm. I was 10 years old when the war ended, and I saw a few of the things that happened on the last days. But in terms of U.S. policy, the U.S. certainly made so many mistakes. So the war was not unwinnable, like many critics say. But winning here meaning defending South Vietnam and not, taking over all of Vietnam, because defeating the communists in the north meant a different thing, right? Mm-hmm. So winning meaning defending South Vietnam, just like, U.S. has been defending South Korea from North Korea, right? Mm-hmm. So it was possible, but U.S. made so many mistakes. U.S. leaders, from Kennedy, who supported the coup against Mr. Diem, that was big, a big game changer. That kind of, caused the security situation in South Vietnam to deteriorate very, very quickly. According to, North Vietnamese sources that I consulted, I study North Vietnamese politics of revolution, and I read North Vietnamese sources, and in 1963, the Diem regime was not in any dangerous position at all. But then, the coup changed all of that. So Kennedy made the serious mistake then, and then Johnson also made many mistakes, and then Nixon made many mistakes as well. So, in terms of U.S. policy, U.S. could have done differently, but, that's how history happened.
One thing I've always wondered is when you look at what happened with the Korean War and the United States went so far until China got involved and said, that's enough of that. What role did the Chinese play in this war that the United States had with Vietnam, or police action, whatever it was called?
The Chinese played a huge role that was not known very well during the war. Mm-hmm. So they actually sent at some point 300,000 troops into North Vietnam to defend North Vietnam, so that North Vietnamese troops could go into South Vietnam to overthrow the government in South Vietnam. So, and the Chinese troops were helping the North Vietnamese defend the airspace, fighting against U.S. bombing, and so on. So quite a few of them died in the war in North Vietnam. So they really, play a big role in the war, throughout the war. And, even if once the U.S. already abandoned the ally in 1973, China continued to support North Vietnam with its tanks and artilleries and so many other things.
So what part did Laos and Cambodia play in this, or how did the United States get involved with that? And that brings us to the Mekong Delta, etc.
Well, Laos and Cambodia were used by North Vietnam to, send its troops and material into South Vietnam. Without access to Laos and Cambodia, the North Vietnam would not have been able to have a big role, to play a big role, or to wage a war in South Vietnam as it did. So North Vietnam was supporting Laotian and Cambodian communist troops and help them fight the royal governments in Laos and Cambodia as well. So U.S. came in to support the royal Laos government against, the coalition of the alliance of North Vietnamese and Laotian communist troops. And later on, when U.S. and South Vietnamese forces invaded Cambodia in 1970 and 1971, the goal was to stop the communists from, getting too close and, maintaining a safe haven in Cambodia, so that, whenever they were defeated in South Vietnam, they would withdraw into Cambodia. And U.S. and South Vietnam would be powerless to pursue them. But in 1970, and 71, South Vietnam was able to do that because thanks to the support of the Cambodian government at the time.
One thing I do remember, and over 58,000 U.S. soldiers died, is that the argument, and it did, for people that think the nation is divided now, they have no idea, and I'm just remembering this as a kid, how divided the nation was then. Fathers, sons, people going to Canada to avoid being drafted, and it, I think, goes to the history of the nation and how different things would be with U.S. involvement were there to be a draft now and it not to be a voluntary military. But along those lines, the argument was proffered that this was to stop the spread of communism, and if we didn't make a stand here, that the entire world would fall to communism. What has history shown since then, especially, Professor, as it relates to Vietnam?
Well, I studied the Vietnamese Communist Revolution, like I said, and they were really ambitious, and they wanted to dominate Southeast Asia after the war. Right? After the war, they wanted to, they went to the Soviet Union asking for support so that they could help spread socialism across Southeast Asia. But they, you know, they overreached. They were too ambitious. They did not have the ability to do that. So within a few years, they failed miserably in South Vietnam, causing, you know, so much misery and suffering to South Vietnamese. And as you know, certainly millions of, you know, Vietnamese had to flee the country because it was unlivable at the time. And they also put hundreds of thousands of personnel of former South Vietnamese government in prison for decades. So, you know, it was not Americans who were separated. It was Vietnamese, and millions of us were separated for decades because of the communist policy. So it was a tragedy for Vietnamese as well after the war. But then, because they failed in there.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
In their ambition to spread socialism and to establish socialism in Vietnam and spread socialism across Southeast Asia, they had to abandon that and then carry out economic reform, which helped Vietnam to become better today, as we know. So looking back 50 years, I think it's perhaps the U.S. overestimated the power of communism to spread, because, you know, there were many people who were against it, and, you know, not just in Vietnam but throughout Southeast Asia. So that's why they were defeated. But then they were really ambitious, and they really wanted to go as far as they could.
When it comes to who is allowed in this country, Vietnamese, the diaspora, if you will, and people that emigrated from Vietnam and fled Vietnam, how did the United States decide who got in, who didn't get in? How did they vet them, et cetera, Professor? Do you know?
Oh, yes. I mean, many of the, I mean, if they had ties to the former anti-communist regime, which was U.S. ally, mm-hmm. the U.S. leaders felt that they had to provide support for them. And secondly, it was a humanitarian crisis, you know, when millions were trying to flee Vietnam and hundreds of thousands were dying in the sea. President Carter really supported helping the Bo people, and that was humanitarian cause.
How does that compare with what the U.S. is facing immigration-wise today?
It was a great crisis, but then the process was conducted legally. You know, so U.S. representatives would fly to the go to the camp, refugee camps, and interview refugees and decide, you know, who would be eligible for immigrating to the U.S. And so it was a completely legal process going through, you know, from the Congress, congressional decision to, you know, kind of government policy through the legal process to bring the refugees here, unlike the, you know, the process today, which happened very chaotically at the border.
Do you know how many Vietnamese people did ultimately wind up in the United States? Originally, of course, obviously, since then, they've had kids who have had kids who have had kids. But do you have any idea?
Yeah, I think about 130,000 people came in after during 1975, and another 2 million coming during the next two or three decades.
Why do you think the Vietnamese people did so well in this nation? And for generally speaking, again, individuals are different. Groups are not. You can look and see what groups did. Generally speaking, the Vietnamese did very well in this country, did they not?
I think it's a mixed picture. Many have done very well, but many have also struggling, mm-hmm. have been struggling, yeah, to make ends meet. So many remain poor and rely on public support, but many have become very successful.
What is life like in Vietnam today?
Life is much, much better in Vietnam today compared to when I was there back in the 80s. So economic reform has brought benefits, and the government also, like I said, abandoned the communist revolution, give people more freedom to make economic decisions, also freedom to travel, inviting a foreign investment into the country, and so on. So like that really improved the lives of millions of Vietnamese.
So ultimately, when it comes to the United States Vietnamese relations, are we treat them as a friendly country, and are we now with the balance of trade, are we now approaching maybe a not so friendly relationship with Vietnam?
I think U.S.-Vietnam relations continue to evolve, you know, from being very hostile to being more friendly. And even though the trend is that the two countries have become more friendly, there are, you know, big economic issues and other issues to settle. Mm-hmm. And the tariff decision by President Trump is one of those. And so Vietnam has benefited a lot from the trade surplus with the U.S. And that can be seen as a loss to the U.S., but that also, you know, a loss for Vietnamese too, because if they can take this as an opportunity to reform the economy, to be less dependent on cheap, low-skill labor, you know, to process Chinese goods to be re-imported to the U.S., then, you know, it would help the country in the long term.
And that gets me to my next question, which is, what is it about the economy? Is it exchange rate? What is it about Vietnam where it's hard for the United States to compete with Vietnam when it comes to manufacturing? And you're saying primarily they're manufacturing Chinese goods, and that's to avoid tariffs or to avoid it appearing as though they're Chinese goods? Take me through that, Professor.
Right. So they are mostly assembling, not manufacturing. The Chinese mm-hmm. and the Koreans and the Singaporeans, they ship their semi-finished goods to Vietnam to be assembled and packaged and then export to the U.S. And for China, that was a way to avoid tariff from the U.S. So Vietnam has benefited from that, but mostly, you know, very little. So they could do a lot better by, you know, training their workers so that their workers can take on more advanced technology and engage in more productive activities. But I'm sorry, I have to go.
No, I understand.
Right now,
I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. I really do appreciate the information. That's Professor Tung Vu, Professor of Political Science, Director of U.S. Vietnam Research Center at the University of Oregon. And you got to wonder what would have happened, given now what we know about the Chinese, and especially after Korea, if the United States had committed everything they had to winning the war in Vietnam. Would the Chinese have gotten involved? How involved would they have gotten? And would that have led to some type of nuclear conflict? We'll never know. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Ricky Boyette about the spillway and the river and more here on WWL. Hi, 9:43, 17 till 10, final day of April 2025. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Ricky Boyette, Chief of Public Affairs for the Army Corps of Engineers, New Orleans Division. It's the time of year where we watch the river and wonder about the spillway and so forth. Morning, Ricky. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me what's going on with the river and the spillway and levels and so forth.
So of the last, I would say the last 5 or 6 days, we've been taking our measurements up around Red River Landing, which is the last point where any water can leave the river. And we're seeing levels come in lower than what were initially forecasted, levels low enough that while it will be closed, we're not going to see the trigger for operating the Bonnie Carey Spillway.
So that's interesting that it's the last area before the water can, because after Red River, you know what's coming, right? There's no place else for it to go.
That's exactly right. Once we have made our diversion at Old River into the Atchafalaya to keep the 70-30 split, mm-hmm. The last place it's going from there is into the Gulf. And so it gives us, at least a two-day window where we see the water, and then it takes about 2 days for it to get from that point to where the Bonnie Carey is.
How high is it now, Ricky? Because I've not been to the levee. Last time I was there a couple of weeks ago, I was driving some golf balls in the river, which they told me I shouldn't do, which I won't. But and there was a lot of batter. Now is it like to the top of the levees or not?
It's not to the top of the levees. It's around 16 and a half feet today. Mm-hmm. Rule of thumb is when we operate Bonnie Carey, it usually crests out around 17 feet. So we do have the room in there, and we also build freeboard into the levee system in New Orleans. So really at the Carrollton Gauge, we're looking at a crest of 17, but we have levees that are 20 to 23 feet high.
So when it comes to other things that could change, more rainfall and everything that drains into the Mississippi, do you factor that in the forecast too, or does this mean we're out of the woods for the entire season? Take me through that.
You're exactly right. When we're looking at a forecast for the river, what you're really looking at is all the different rivers, whether it be the Ohio River or the White River, Arkansas River. We're looking at what these rivers are doing because we know ultimately that water is going to enter the Mississippi. What we are seeing is while the crest is going to come in a little lower, it's going to come in longer. So originally, we were looking at a peak of about a day and then start to fall. That's being extended out. So we're going to be in a flood fight for most of May. And then, of course, we have to continue to watch, what rain falls in the Red River area or the Ohio. Because if we're at a high river and then we get more rain, well, then that has effect on not only duration, but potential rise again.
So tell me how this affects the saltwater intrusion and the wedge and so forth. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And then also when you talk about the flood fight, what exactly does that mean? And because the physics of this is you got the pressure against the levees over a period of time and the flow of the river. Take me through all of that, Ricky, if you would.
Sure. With the saltwater intrusion, that's only an extreme low water situation. So as the river is pushing out, it's got enough force to keep the Gulf out into the Gulf. It's not allowing that to come in. So we have no saltwater coming into the Mississippi right now. With the flood fight, the key is you're exactly right. It's the system, even though we're not operating Bonnie Carey, is under a lot of pressure. So the Corps, as well as the levee districts, are out every day, and we're looking for anything that could become a problem before it's a problem. And obviously, you know, that can be seepage or sand boils, but it's also small things that can grow into a big thing. I like to use an armadillo can create a seepage path overnight. So we want to identify it as soon as possible. And we'll need to do that as long as the river is above 11 feet.
So is there anything people should be looking for?
Absolutely. You know, especially when you're looking at the river system in New Orleans, they're used as recreation as much as they are flood fighting. So people are walking it or riding their bikes every day. And if they see anything unusual, by all means, give us a call. But we're looking for, you know, if there is a barge that's parked close to the levee or if someone's doing work. You know, a lot of times when we talk about all work has to stop, people are thinking big construction projects, but it could be somebody needs to fix their sewage line. Or in one case, we had someone was planting tulips at the toe of the levee, and that means they're digging into the ground. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those things that we're looking for. And we have a commitment that if you report it to us, we will have someone go look at it.
So I guess when it comes to the Bonnie Carey Spillway, we can say it's not – what can we say, Ricky? I'm trying to get a handle on his timeline and so forth. When do we know yet, really, or just for now?
It's for now because we don't know what rain and that will happen in the valley over the duration of what we consider a high water season that really goes till June. Right now, the flows that we're expected are coming in a little lower, as well as the elevations are kind of being dropped through the National Weather Service. So we do not see reaching our trigger of 1.25 million cubic feet per second moving through New Orleans. Put that in a different way. It would be about 9 million gallons passing through New Orleans every second. That is what our levee system is designed to hold. We do not see that right now, but it's close. And so conditions can change in the future. But right now, it's a positive trend that we hope continues.
Is there such a thing as to say when we will have the all clear?
If the river, yes, in that, you know, as the river begins to drop and we're coming closer to the end of the flood fight season, you can be more confident that water and rain in the valley will not affect the river so greatly. So as long as it's high, we're going to be on alert. But then as it starts to fall, then, you know, you get a lot more confidence that the high water season itself is coming to a close.
And I get a text real quick from somebody worried about navigation and ships running into the levee and so forth. What kind of a concern is that?
It is a concern. You know, we're always watching. We work very closely with the Coast Guard to ensure as the river gets bigger and it gets faster, it becomes more challenging to navigate. Fortunately, we have good partners with the Coast Guard that are, you know, ensuring that the safe rules are being applied. We did have those barges that in Baton Rouge area come up. They were able to remove the Pontchartrain Levee District was immediately on site. They've got it backed up. The initial review that we're continuing for that section of the levee is it's in good shape.
Someone texted in a meeting of the Association of Levee Boards in Baton Rouge this week. Will you be attending that, and what's going to happen there?
So twice a year, the levee, all the levee districts gather together. They do in the spring. They also do in December. We do participate. Our team participates as well as our commander will give an update during the early morning session tomorrow morning.
So we want to hope for not a lot of rain upriver, correct?
That's right. I would say we want to hope for not a lot of rain all at one time in the river. Okay. You know, the river is big, and those that are feeding those tributaries, those rivers that are feeding it, are a lot smaller than Mississippi, so we can handle a lot more water than most places. But if it all happens at one time, that's where you start to see the kind of rise that we saw this year. Is because in early April, we had what some were reporting a generational rain event happening in many places simultaneously.
Thank you, Ricky. Appreciate the information. Chief of Public Affairs for the Army Corps of Engineers, New Orleans Division, Ricky Boyette. Quick reminder, it's a town hall with President Trump in his first 100 days, moderated by Chris Cuomo from News Nation with Bill O'Reilly, Stephen A. Smith. Don't miss it tonight from 7 till 9 right here on WWLAMFM.com and the free Odyssey app. Newell's coming up next. Oh, real quick, some unfinished business. That was Peter Griffin before that you heard, not A League of Their Own. It was Peter Griffin about the Who Are You game. Newell's next. We'll see what he's got for us when we come back. WWL.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.